We Talk Podcasts is now proudly presented by Geek Nation Tours. The zombie apocalypse is imminent. Could you survive? You'll have a better chance after completing Geek Nation Tours Zombie Apocalypse Training 101. Learn to fire weapons, scrounge for food, and actually run from zombies. The time of the geek is at hand. Geek Nation Tours provides fun and unique vacation packages featuring themes such as the Civil War, Harry Potter, board games and beer, sports geeks, in locations such as Germany, Japan, England, and all over America. Visit geeknationtours.com and get your geek on.
Here we go. It is episode 131 of We Talk Comics. I am the co-host Keith. I am joined by Chris. Say hi, Chris.
Yeah, good week for comics this week. Lots of DC previews and stuff.
It's a good week for comics. And next week's going to be even better. We're rejoined by a friend of the show, Ed Brisson. Ed, how you been?
Been pretty good. You guys?
I've been really good. There's been a lot of cool comics. There's a crazy amount of comic book, movie, and TV things going on. There was a little movie called The Avengers came out last weekend. Did you guys see it?
I have not seen it yet.
All right. Yeah. Chris, what was that?
No, I'm doing awful. It snowed today, so let's move along. Snow. Freaking meh.
Ed is so focused on the work, he does not get to see, or he just doesn't give a crap. That's a
question. I just haven't, like, I saw the new Mad Max last night, but I just haven't gotten to the theater to watch Avengers yet.
Isn't
that not open for another week?
Yeah, I know, but when you're royalty like me.
I forgot your celebrity status.
Yeah. No, I just happened into an advance pass for it, so got to see it with a bunch of other advance pass people last night.
Give us your unfiltered.
Man, I don't know. Like, I'm really conflicted about it still, to be honest. It's like a full on 2 hour, full on assault on the senses. Like, it's just nonstop from beginning to end. And I don't know if it's just because I'm getting older or just, like, that's not what I'm looking for in a movie. It was just too much. Like, I came out of the theater. I could barely speak. I couldn't form sentences. And it was just, I don't know. Like, I it was the action and it was really amazing. But the, like, character development and story was pretty much nil. And I know, like, you know, that's not necessarily what Mad Max is known for, but there's been a lot more in the past films than there definitely was in Fury Road. You know, it was fun. I don't think it has a lot of rewatch value, not for me anyway.
I think that, I mean, all that heavy lifting was done in the Mad Max movie that, you know, those of us of an age never saw. I mean, Road Warrior was a huge VHS release, but none of us actually saw Mad Max. Until
I did.
Did you actually see it, like, way back in the day?
Yeah. We used to have Super Channel, which we're all Canadian here, right? We all know what Super Channel is. First choice Super Channel. Had that back in the day.
I remember when it was just Super Channel.
There was two of them.
They were competing.
Yeah.
It was great. I remember watching many a scrambled porn movie, softcore porn movie.
Listeners, we had a magic box that gave us joyful television and movies all the time.
It was basically HBO for Canada, back when HBO only showed movies. But they used to show Mad Max on there a lot because I remember the first time I saw an original cut of Mad Max, wondering why the fuck Mel Gibson had an Australian accent.
That messes your mind the first time you see that one.
Because, yeah, obviously, like the Mad Max, it was widely available. He had been dubbed with an American accent. But anyway, I'm well familiar with the films. I watched them a ton growing up. I really, they hold a special place in my heart. And again, I don't know if I'm just too old for the new Mad Max, or if it's just, or maybe it was just too much. I felt like they kind of went for, like, it looked amazing, the production design and the action scenes and everything were incredible, but I just wanted a little bit more story. And I get that not
the first time.
Go ahead. You first.
No, I was just going to say, I remember the first time I saw Mad Max, I remember getting really mad that they were ripping off so much from The Road Warrior, because I did not know it was a sequel.
That's awesome.
Mel Gibson wasn't the tip-off?
That's it. They turn in each film.
All right.
He looked a fair bit different by the second one. Quite a few years between those two.
I think so, yeah. Well, we can find that out. I bet. Let's have a look on the.
We had a magic box that could do that for us.
Mad Max 17. Oh, it was only 2 years in between them.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's just the production value was so different.
Yeah, well, because the first one was super low budget, and the second one had much more money because the first had been such a success. And also by the same guy directing the Babe movies, which always kills me.
It's George Miller, right?
Yeah.
Well,
I don't mind the Babe films. It's the Happy Feet thing that sort of bothers me.
Oh, did he do Happy Feet as well?
He did both Happy Feet movies.
Huh.
Well, and there's a crazy comic book connection for George Miller. George Miller was going to do the Justice League movie about 15 years ago.
Not even that long ago. I feel like that was like 5 or 6 years ago, and I could be wrong.
It was a little longer than that because it was before they killed it to do Batman Begins.
Right. Okay.
It was right around the time the OC was ending because Adam Brody, who was one of the leads in the OC, was going to be Flash.
Right.
They were in the hotels. Ready to get bussed over to the set. They were that close.
Yeah, I remember the whole thing. And then, funny enough, probably because I just watched Mad Max last night, I had been thinking about that just earlier today. But
what could have been?
I've
read the script. We're okay.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
It's pretty superhero movie prior to Batman Begins.
Right.
And I mean, I think at that point you had seen a couple of X-Men's and like maybe one Spider-Man. It was very much, I mean, imagine Justice League done, like Catwoman or Elektra kind of thing.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Did you ever see that Justice League TV show pilot they did?
Oh, you bet.
That's awesome. I love that. I had Manhunter, who, spoiler alert for a show that was never released. When Manhunter shows up at the end, he actually looked like Martian Manhunter to me. I love that.
Oh, yeah.
But he just likes it because it's as Booster Gold.
I would say that it was decidedly not awesome.
Booster isn't in that one.
Isn't Booster in that one? I thought I remembered him.
Blue Beetle is, and it's Adam, Blue Beetle, Fire and Ice, and Martian Manhunter. Yeah, it's a wacky show. Well, I've got breaking comic book TV news. We expected this to be a little longer, but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter have been picked up for a second season. Or a new season, I should say.
Right.
And
you know what? I was actually expecting Agent Carter to change to the Peggy Carter who made a cameo in the Captain America Winter Soldier.
To Sharon Carter, you mean?
Sharon Carter, yeah.
Or do you mean 90-year-old Peggy Carter? Because
no.
I would watch that. Now you're talking like excellent TV. 8 episodes of Peggy Carter, bedridden hero.
Murder She Wrote was pretty old by the time the show was.
I believe her name was Jessica Fletcher.
Show some respect to the classic.
Yes.
let's go into some news. We'll do some news.
All right.
As always, the news is sponsored by Comicosity. Comicosity is a website that only does comic book news. And this week we're doing some comic book news for a change. Usually I say that and then immediately do movie news. So we're getting, this was announced a couple weeks ago, but we haven't covered it on the show. The next crazy Archie book will be Archie versus Sharknado.
I saw that. I saw that announced, but
Do you watch the Sharknado app?
I have seen the Sharknados, and I was making a case with somebody the other day that I thought all those Asylum, all their sea creature films would be awesome to do as comics. If you remove their, like, there's such a ridiculous premise, and if you remove that, like, limitation of budget, and just do it just a fucking balls-to-the-wall crazy-ass story with them, I think it'd be a lot of fun. I don't think they're going to do that in Archie, though. I'm not sure. Archie and balls-to-the-wall are not normally synonymous.
That's the cover blurb. I don't know.
All right. Shows what I know.
Welcome to Riverdale, balls-to-the-wall.
Perfect.
You know, Sharknado, I've never really got that. I mean, they maxed out at Sharktopus. That one was the bomb. Going any further was ridiculous.
It's a NATO full of sharks. I don't know what there is to understand.
What the hell? I'm living in the 90s.
It's an entire NATO full of sharks. So I'm in for that. I was very disappointed when Tara Reid dropped out of the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo. I was pretty excited about getting my photo with the Sharknado cast, but that did not happen.
I was a little relieved because I couldn't find cat ears anywhere for us. Yeah, cat ears are surprisingly hard to find when you actually want them.
You never just ask me. You should have asked me, man. I got an 8-year-old kid. She would tell you wherever. She's got radar for that sort of stuff. She'll be able to tell you where you can get them in Lloydminster.
It's like one of those kids, one of those shows with the psychic kid. She just looks at a map.
Absolutely. I don't even think she needs to look at a map. She could rattle them off, I'm sure.
just in case she's ever traveling through.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's indicated on her Google Maps.
Are some surprisingly expensive cat ear sellers on the internet that you can spend a lot of money on. I was surprised to learn that when I was searching.
Yeah, so, I would want Safe Search on if I'm gonna be. I'm gonna plug purchase cat ears into Google.
I was looking for Josie and the Pussycat, so I used the wrong terminology when I.
if you put on Kijiji, want to dress girl up like cat, will pay.
Yeah, you'll be in trouble, I think.
I think
that the premise of Kevin Smith's last film?
If not, it should be the premise of his next film.
Except it was a walrus, yes.
Coming in September, we're getting Neil Gaiman and Mark Buckingham's Miracle Man. They are finally going to complete the story that they began 25 years ago. One of these days, I've got to read Miracle Man.
Yeah, you know, I haven't read it either. I know a lot of people like it, but I've never gotten around to reading it.
Well, and my excuse was always it was never in print, and now it's in print and it's ridiculously expensive, so I guess I can just switch.
Yeah, well, you got an excuse still. That's a valid excuse.
I've tried, and it suffers from a lot of 80s, whoa, that's a lot of words for a small little comic panel. Which, at the time, during the decade, didn't bother me, but now it's death.
How many words is a comfortable amount for a page, Ed?
Per panel is 35. That's your maximum you want to hit. I can't remember what it is per page. I think it was like 150 per page. Let me type into the Googles. How many words per comic page?
That's what I like about having an expert.
I know there's a rule, because like the 35 words per panel is the Alan Moore.
Oh.
Is the Alan Moore standard?
Yeah, and I often hear these days the length of the tweet is a good amount for
that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. 35 words per panel, 200 words per page. Although this person claims that limiting your dialogue to 25 words per panel is much, much better. There's a whole lot of I don't know who Buzz Dixon is. I'm taking this from him, but
Dixon, writer of the G.I. Joe cartoon, as well as Heathcliff of Star Comics, yes.
All right, see? I knew that somebody was going to know who he was.
I was a huge Buzz Dixon fan because I always thought it was a pen name of Chuck Dixon because he only appeared on Embarrassing Comics.
Right.
But turns out he's a real guy.
All right. Oh, yeah. He's written Destroyer Duck, Buck Rogers, Transformers, Thundar the Bear Barbarian. Yeah, you're right. There we go.
That's a lot of properties out there.
Yeah. He wrote episodes of the show, so he did more cartooning work than he did comic work, it looks like.
Actually wrote the G.I. Joe theatrical cartoon, so.
There we go.
It's a pity. It's a
area.
It's a pity that Neil Adams got that rule of thumb mixed up and put 200 words per pen.
Yeah. Man, that's the thing, is like I've done a lot of lettering and I've run into that a lot with like the worst are actually the screenwriters turned comic writers.
Those are
the guys who don't know how to cut it down. I was doing a book years ago for a company, and this one writer had like 400 words per panel. It was just crazy. And then I sent it back and said that they had to cut it. And when he actually cut it, he cut like 10 words. I ended up having to send them back all the dialogue just laid like end to end on the page, and showed them that there was more dialogue than there was actually page. That it just wasn't possible to even fit it all. Anyway, I'm on a tangent.
Oh, that's amazing. I read an interview with Jeff King, who's writing Convergence at DC, and he's a screenwriter writing his first comics, and said he turned in his script for number one. They sent it back and said, yeah, you've given us a graphic novel.
Yeah.
You haven't given us a 20-page comic. You've given us about 100 pages worth. So let's start trimming.
That has to be a tough transition, though.
Yeah, absolutely. I think.
If you're not experienced in comic books, because we have our own language, and it seems to change every couple of years on how much dialogue we like in our comic books.
Well, I think it goes beyond that. Like I've like I said, I've worked on a few books that screenwriters have done, and one thing I do see a lot is more than just the language. There's a lot of they don't seem to get how you can only kind of like squeeze one moment into every panel. Mm. So sometimes there'll be a description of like four or five movements in a panel that you just can't do it. Right. So anyway, you do run into that sort of stuff a lot. But I feel like right now there's a lot of people who work in film and work in TV who they are comic book readers. They grew up comic book readers. You see a lot more crossover now, mm-hmm. it seems.
Yeah, and it's I guess it's a bit more. People used to they would move from one to the other, but there's a lot more playing back and forth.
Yeah,
and certainly anyone who's working on the TV and film properties, a lot of them are doing little like shorter runs and such, or in continuity stories.
And I mean we kind of owe that to Jeff Loeb and like that, because he was almost exiled from the movie industry when he stopped, moved to comic books for a while, and then he had a tough time getting back into the film.
Yeah, I feel that's probably not anything to do with and just this is me saying without knowing, but I feel that it's so hard to get into film that if you leave for any period of time, that unless you're like a Terrence Malick or a Spielberg or something like that, it's really hard to get back in. You almost gotta, you almost lose your place if you walk away from it. That's true. Just from knowing a few people who work in the film industry.
This, what have you? I suppose any creative field is.
Yeah, absolutely.
What have you done for me lately?
Yeah, and if you're a big enough name that sometimes you can walk away and then come back, like Brian K. Vaughan or Warren Ellis or something like that. If you walk away, if you're not that level, walk away and try and come back, it's a struggle to get back in for sure.
So I'm going to do one more news story. DC Comics is doing a big relaunch in June. Half their line is number ones, half the line is jump on points. And as of this week, they've started putting out free 8-page stories that are basically prologues for the June issues. Chris, have you had a chance to look at any of these?
I had a read on Section 8, of course, because Dog Welder. I have a huge... I'm a huge fan of Dog Welder. And I have to say, Omega Men, they did it right. I was really scared that it was just going to be a superhero book, and they seem to be including the religious tones to the Omega Men, and I think it's going to be really good, actually.
Omega Men was a bit subversive. I mean, it's essentially, they're insurgents. They're the invaded in a war.
Even the imagery of just a prisoner sitting on a chair, which the entire book is just Kyle Rayner sitting on a chair with a bag over his head. Sorry, spoiler on that one. it does invoke ISIS, and this is the hero of the book. It's going to be a really interesting. I'm excited about this book.
Ed, have you heard of Dog Welder before?
No.
Chris, give him the pitch for Dog Welder.
Oh, he's great. His only power is to weld dogs to things. Now, he's never welded a live dog. It is implied that he is capable of, but he always seems to carry an ample supply of dead dogs around with him. No note on where he gets those dogs. It's an awesome power. He should have his own regular series.
All right. I'm just looking at it right now online. It's from Hitman.
Garth Ennis is returning to DC to do the book called Section 8.
All right.
Which is bringing these backup characters from Hitman back into comic. That was half of it was enjoying the story, and half of it was knowing how excited Chris was that Dog Welder was back, and that there was really, and I wasn't expecting this was going to be an 8-page story featuring Dog Welder. that was even better. Like, that was just amazing.
Nice.
Midnighter is the other one that I really dug. There's been 10 8-page stories so far. Green Arrow has a new team on it, which looks really cool. Midnighter, which is the first time they've had a gay and single male lead for a DC comic. So he's
Apollo break. I never could follow that storyline.
They haven't said yet. I mean, they were together in the New 52, so presumably there's some explanation of why they're not in the series, but it's not an 8-page story. But yeah, he will be dating. Is one of the pitches of the book. But it's like crazy violent and hilarious. The 8-page.
All right, I've got it loaded on my computer right now. So as soon as this is over, I'm gonna give it a read.
I would say you start with Dog Welder. I mean we could almost wait so that you could.
No, I'm good. I'll read it afterwards. I'm flipping through the pages right now.
So I'll say DCComics.com and Comixology, Amazon, all of the places you get your digital comics. These 8-page stories are all available for free. If you are a print person, they are backups for no extra price in this month's issues of the Convergence tie-ins. And then all these books launch in June. Coming up, I think it's the last week of the month, is the one Local Boy Makes Good that we're all excited about. Riley Rossmo is taking over art on Hellblazer.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Excited about that.
So I believe that's the last week in May that comes out, and then middle of June for his number one.
If there was ever an artist born for a particular comic book, Hellblazer and Riley Rossmo, it's going to be awesome. I can't wait.
Yeah, we're hoping to have Riley on right around the time that one of those two is coming out. It's been a while since we've chatted with him. And a friend of the show, Robert Venditti, his Green Lantern was out this week, which is a new Jump On Point Green Lantern Renegade, which is Hal Jordan on the run. So some really cool things, and you know, a great way to test them. I am hoping so much that Marvel does something similar when they get on the other side of Secret Wars. I'd love to have something to really get samplings.
I think Marvel's going to be is already pretty sensitive about them supposedly copying DC at every turn.
Yeah, and it's funny that whichever one. I mean, for those that play the I'm a Marvel, I'm a DC, whichever one you side with, the other one's copying.
I was about to say, because I usually hear people accusing DC of copying Marvel, not the other way around, but I can definitely see both sides of the argument.
I mean, often it's just the zeitgeist. It has nothing to do with one copying the other. It's like the old Swamp Thing and Man Thing. They were created within a year of each other by two people who were roommates, and neither one of them
and both had read The Heap.
Yeah, and that's actually what happened, is that they had a pile of comics laying around their apartment, and they both read The Heap and came up with a riff for one for Marvel, one for DC. So they had nothing to do with each other. They were both inspired by the same source material. And often that's what happens. Convergence and Secret Wars, at least on the surface, seem to have a lot in common. But I mean, Convergence, all this stuff's been in the can since the middle of last year. And Secret Wars has been in Hickman's head probably for 2 years. It doesn't mean that, you know, there was any cross-pollination at all. It's just, that's just the way it worked out. Have you ever had that happen, Ed, that you're working on a project and then a book drops that's like exactly where you were going?
Oh yeah. I had that happen really badly this year. On a book, and I'm not even gonna say what book it was or what book I think is similar to mine. Mine doesn't come out probably for at least not till the end of 2015, early 2016. But there was a book that there were so many similarities. I feel like it cannot be coincidence, and I did turn out that one of the creatives on that was in a position where they may have had access to my book that's coming out. So yeah, so like, but I've had that happen where it like, so that was a frustrating, and I'm sure it was not a case of being copied, but it's one of those things that, you know, it gets you it does get you worried a little bit. I find it happens all the time. Like when we were working on Comeback, we were like, you know, we were like halfway through. It's still months before the book came out, and then trailers for Looper started dropping, and like Looper and Comeback are very different, but on the surface, you know, there are quite a few similarities.
If you're just at like the log line stage, then
kinda, yeah. And it's like just basically they're both involve time travel and both sort of crime based books. I had, you know, what, like Cluster came out, and right around the time that Cluster came out, Bitch Planet came out, and similar premise with like shipping prisoners off to like a prison on a different planet, in Bitch Planet. So it's an all women prison. And Cluster, it's a co-ed thing. Both books again are completely different, but it's those sort of initial sort of launch points that might seem similar. And yeah,
not casting aspersions. I mean, certainly, Orange is the New New Black is in the ether. So
sure, yeah, and so yeah, it was just a weird thing, and. You know, my worry is just that, like, you kind of get people, especially with social media and stuff, you get people who are just like, you know, they'll hop online and they'll be like, hey, this looks really similar to you know, say, Bitch Planet. And I'm like, what am I going to say? Yeah, I copied this book that came out 2 weeks before mine and was able to get it, like, solicited, printed, and distributed all within 2 weeks, like written, drawn, solicited, distributed, printed, etc. It's just those things that happen, and you know, it's whatever. It'll happen to everyone, and it sucks, but it's just the way it is. I run into it more, like you run into it more sort of behind the scenes if you're working with a company sometimes where, like I've been working on licensed stuff where I was, you know, I wrote Sons of Anarchy, and there was one or two stories that I pitched them that I couldn't do because I basically pitched them a story that they were going to do in the upcoming season.
Right.
And so it's just, you know, it's that sort of stuff. It's a confluence of things that are out there. You know, people are picking up little bits of media here and there, be it TV shows or news articles and stuff. And that's, you know, that sort of, channels your thought process a bit, and you start picking up like these bits from everything that's around you, right? And start reassembling into ideas, I guess. And so you're going to get people who are going to be, especially in comics, where such a closed world, you get people who are exposed, like a large group of people who are all being exposed to almost, you know, very similar media or the same media. You know, we're all going to see the same movies half the time and reading the same books, so. It's bound to happen.
Just because you mentioned Sons of Anarchy, I just had a quick question. Your first issue of Sons of Anarchy actually contains none of the regular characters. Was that a stall tactic of some kind, or
no?
Catch up on the series, or it was awesome. I just thought it was really strange to start off. Let's take this side character that starts. In season 3 or something,
really,
and
I really liked that character.
Oh, I did too. And, he was my favorite character.
My task at that point, that was before I was actually at that point, I was under the impression I was only writing one issue, and I didn't know I'd be writing any more beyond that. So I had pitched them this story idea about Lee Torek, and I just want, you know, for they wanted me to do a one off, and I thought, you know, I like this character a lot. At the point where I wrote that, he was still on the show, I believe, or it was right. Anyway, I don't want to spoil the show for anyone, but he was just a character I liked, and it was like one of like three pitches I'd sent him. Other pitches involved other characters. I think I had one about OP and one about I don't remember, but that was the one the studio chose, the studio and Boom chose. And it was the one that my editor put in there and was pretty sure that they wouldn't pick because it didn't have any of the main cast members. And that was one of the things that I always thought was really cool about Sons of Anarchy. showrunners is that they were involved. They had like one person on the writing staff who was involved and sort of overseeing the comic and approving things and making sure everything falls into continuity on all that sort of stuff. And they were always really cool with like just kind of letting you flex a little bit and not necessarily have to do stories that are all about Jax all the time, you know, about the main dude. Because I think they know that that shit gets boring. And there's nothing wrong with the comic with sort of going off on the side and doing a character about, you know, or a story about a character who may have only been in it for a season.
No, actually, you're two. I think you only did two standalone issues. The happy one day in your run and the Lee Torek were my favorites.
Yeah, I did five standalone issues total. I did the Lee Torek one, then I did Bobby, Happy, Juice, and God damn it, I wrote it. I should know. Oh Christ! Off the top of my head, I can't remember what the last solo one I did was. Jeez, I never thought I'd forget stuff I wrote. Now I'm gonna have to look that up. But what happened was the last four that I did they wanted me to do a new arc, and I knew that was actually the last arc I was gonna do, and part of why it was gonna be the last arc is I just kind of like, I think I told the stories I'd wanted to tell, and just kind of wanted to focus on doing some solo stories. So yeah, they let me do those five solo stories, or you know, over the course of the 12 issues I wrote, I got to write five solo stories, which I really enjoyed doing. And I thought they were a lot of fun because then you don't have to worry about like the huge team dynamics and worrying about like, you know, with one character, it's easier to focus in on telling a good story that's not going to conflict with the show. Right. If you're trying to tell a story that involves eight characters, all of a sudden it just starts getting more problematic. The other one was what's his face? Kyle Hobart.
Okay.
So that if you want to talk about a story that's even less, Kyle Hobart was in one episode from season one, and I got to do a solo one issue about him. Although the other members of the gang were in that episode, but
I actually thought it was really innovative how they included scenes that were in the TV show, such as Opie's wedding.
Right.
Just expanding the whole thing, and like I knew we were coming to a wedding here, and it's like, well, he can't go there because that's in the show. But I thought you did it really well that you actually lifted lines of dialogue and like that.
Yeah, well, that was like because that was the first as part of the first arc I got to tell, and that was. Yeah, it was interesting because like they wanted to tell when he was in prison or when they were in prison for that period of time. And it was like to tell that story properly, I had to like sort of use, you know, that part from the TV show. There was no way to kind of wrap it up without actually touching on stuff that they'd already touched on the TV show. Anyway, so...
It worked anyway. I was I was just surprised that you were allowed to go there, number one, and it didn't hurt the book by going there. I was impressed.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I like I said, they were really cool about that sort of stuff, those guys. So yeah, they were cool about letting us do that. I think they're really focused on like story. You know, with those guys. So like with the Sons of Anarchy show, with them being involved, they're really focused on telling a good story. So you don't ever sort of run into them standing away in the way of something that is interesting just so they can just sort of, push or maintain their brand, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably just contradict myself there, but whatever. you guys get what I'm talking about.
And right after we talked to you last, you were just about to start 24.
Is it that long ago we talked?
It is, yeah. It was Calgary okay. Expo last year, yeah.
Okay, right.
So I think number one was either just out or just coming out.
Right.
Now, how was that? Like, I mean, again, you were working within within the continuity of what they were doing.
Yeah, that one was weird. That one was a lot harder to set up when we got going, because it was just a complicated process sort of getting it set up. But once we'd sort of locked in on a story, they were awesome. They just let me go basically, and didn't really stand in the way much. They just they had notes periodically, but like once we'd kind of locked down the initial story, it was a 5-issue thing. So I had to pretty heavily outline the first 5 issues for them. And beyond that, like I said, they just let me go.
Now, just 24 has a huge body out there. I think it was 8 or 9 seasons and mm-hmm. a movie. And you don't repeat anything that's happened because the fans of this property are insane.
Yes, I am.
Did you watch the entire series to sort of get a feel for it, or what? How much do you have to actually watch to really get into it, or do you just have your own spy story and rework it?
For both Sons of Anarchy and both 24, I had watched those shows up until that point, so it wasn't a matter of having to go back and rewatch all that stuff to get familiar with it. I was already familiar with it going in, I didn't have to go back and watch all of 24. I knew it quite well. I did sort of read just some synopsis and stuff like that just to get myself back up to speed, but I went through a phase where I watched nothing but 24 for 2 months or something like that. I can't remember however long it took us to finish it. And the same with Sons of Anarchy. Like I blazed through that show when it first came out, or when I first started watching it, which was probably about 4 years ago. I just blazed right through it, in a matter of weeks.
I've never done I've always wanted, I thought about doing a 24 experiment, to do like a whole season of 24 in 24 hours.
I've also thought, I've also thought about doing that, but I've also thought about like my own sanity.
You'd have to go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, I'm going to save you guys some trouble. I did it with the first season. When I first got it on DVD, I tried it and never wanted to see another episode.
All right. Well,
it was just too long and too much, and I think that's why I just don't get 24.
Maybe if I just did the last season, like the 12 episode season, that I might be able to handle.
Are the 12 episodes, are they just an hour long, or are they each 2 hours?
They're an hour. Yeah, they only did. Okay. The final season is 12 1-hour episodes. It's still in real time. They just, you know, had it take place over half a day. The events occur in real time thing stayed. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd have to build in a few breaks anyway to stretch yourself out to 24 hours.
Right.
It's roughly 18 hours for a season. Only 18 hours. You'd have to build in a little, an hour here and there to, shower, look at the sun, make sure you're not getting bed sores, that kind of
for
thing.
For sure.
A cooler and move the TV into the toilet.
He's Chris in full on 24 mode. It's one that I love that show so much, and I've been through most of the seasons twice. Like I think I actually rewatched everything till all the full seasons to be ready for the final season. I haven't rewatched the final season.
I don't think I could do. I'm not one for like, I don't often rewatch stuff that I have watched in the past.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's any TV shows where I've done that.
Twin Peaks like 8 or 9 times, right?
No, you know what? I've never seen Twin Peaks all the way through.
Oh, wow.
I have this this thing, and this is how I know that going back to our Murder, She Wrote thing earlier, that it's Jessica Fletcher, is that when I was growing up, my mom was really into both Murder, She Wrote and then later Twin Peaks. And so I always equated Twin Peaks with being like a mom show. And
I love that those two shows are matched up in your mind as thematically similar.
I know it's not true now, obviously, but at the time it felt very true to me. And so I just like I had zero interest in watching it. And now everybody I know, loves it, and everybody's seen it a million times. I can never get past the second episode of season 2. So I don't know. It just doesn't click for me.
if you can make it to like
chocolate peanut butter situation.
Yeah. I just love that juxtaposition though. My mom did not watch Twin Peaks.
No,
my mom had
there you
taste
go.
Stuff. She would watch Dukes of Hazzard with me. So that was... So you just got back from C2E2, Ed?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago I did. Yeah.
What's that show like? I haven't been to that show.
It's a good one. It's the one where it's kind of weird because like it's not a huge sales show for me.
Yeah.
But it is one where I tend to do the I tend to get a lot of like sort of talking to editors and meeting with people and a lot of really good like time spent hanging out with people I know. And so it's always like a really good show for me in that regard. And it's a lot of fun. And my only complaint is that the convention center is pretty far from anything. So I never really get to see Chicago.
Right.
I've been there twice now and never really get to see Chicago. But other than that, it's a great show.
Yeah, I went to Wizard World there 2 years ago, and if I hadn't planned the extra day, I still don't really see. I feel like I saw that much in Chicago, but I like at least did one like boat tour and saw a few things. I didn't do the whole Ferris Bueller visit all
right.
Vacations thing or anything, but.
I guess that's the thing too. I've totally forgot that that's set there, isn't it?
Yeah. So there's like tours and everything, and a lot of the big locations are still around. The museum and it's not the Sears Tower anymore. I can't remember what they do call it. But you can still go. I'm told that that they have to clean those windows every day because everyone leans against them.
Nice. Of course. Yeah. Probably not a bad idea to clean the windows every day.
So, Ed, you've got all of the books coming out.
Every book.
It's a busy. You're like crazy busy right now.
It's kind of a weird time because I don't know when this is going to air, but like May 13th, I've got a couple books coming out. I've got The Mantle number 1 coming out and. Secret Wars Battle World number 1 coming out. Sorry, that's my printer going in the background there.
We'll pretend later that we added all these special effects.
Nah, it's all cool.
Make it sound more office.
So it's cool. Like The Mantle, I'm excited to get that out. It's with Brian Level. It's sort of a superhero ish book. That we're doing through Image, and Brian is a dude who I've been like wanting to work with for years. He and I have been talking probably 3-4 years now. We've done like 3 short stories together. We did a murder book and a couple other things, And we've been talking about doing a larger, longer, bigger project. And that's what the Mantle is. So it's it's a superhero book about sort of it plays around with that trope of like a mantle style power or a legacy sort of power that gets passed down from one host to another. You know, as the previous dies, he passes it on to a new champion, I guess. And we open the book with our man Robbie, who's coming out from a punk show, and he gets struck with the power and finds out, you know, he meets these other superheroes and finds out he's been gifted with this incredible power that's limited only by his own imagination. So it literally is anything he wants it to be. So essentially makes him the most powerful being in the world. But the downside is that he is the 38th guy to have this power in the last 10 years. So the turnover rate's quite high and the chance of survival is quite low. And we get into why that is going in. There's basically a mantle hunter, I guess, who seeks to take them all out that they've got to fight. And yeah, it's just a lot of fun. It basically was a book that was sort of born out of an argument I was having about someone with comics, or with somebody about comics, sorry, about that whole idea. Like, because I really like that, like, sort of that legacy idea of where the power gets passed down.
Right.
You do see it a lot in comics, but what you don't see in comics is it actually getting passed down, other than like the origin story. You know what I mean? Like, you usually get that person who, you know, like Hal Jordan gets the ring, and then he has it for however long he's had it for, 40 years or something like that. And he's lost it various times, and there have been others, but it's never because he's died, which is, you know, which is the way that it's supposed to work with the Green Lantern rings. And same, like, there's like with Phantom is another one where, like, it's passed down. That one's generational, where it's passed down from father to son. But, like, it's, you know, you've seen it before in books, and I just wanted to play around with that, where, like, the whole thing of you dying is really a very, very real threat.
And I was excited reading it that you set quite a few pages of the story on Prince Edward Island.
Yeah, it opens in Sudbury, Ontario.
Picturesque, and then, Sudbury, Ontario.
And it's I spent some time in my 20s in Sudbury, and so actually a lot of the settings in the first few pages of the issue are actually places that I used to hang out a lot when I lived in Sudbury. So that opens a pub, and there's a scene where they go and they're sitting under a bridge, which is a bridge that my friends and I used to go and sit under and drink. And actually, even the band that's playing on the first page when you open the comic is actually the band I used to be in back in my 20s. And then, yeah, that goes over to PEI for a little bit. It'll be a little tour of Canada throughout the comic.
I dropped a note to my old comic shop. I grew up on PEI. The comic shop I used to go to, I dropped them a note and said, up your orders. I mean, come on. Like, how many comics take place on PEI?
Just very briefly. I think I sent Brian an actual house from PEI. At the time, I was looking at real estate in PEI.
Yeah.
Which, like, at the risk of making myself sound wealthy, you're from PEI, so you know what real estate out there actually costs, which is nothing. I was looking at like, not actually to buy a place, but doing that sort of fantasy thing where, like, oh man, I could, like, for $10,000, I could buy a house out there and just disappear, you know, like just go off the map.
Let's be fair. You are living in the city with probably the highest real estate prices outside of Hong Kong.
Yeah. We're second only to Hong Kong, which is, super awesome. In no respect, my wife and I want to buy a house badly, and when we moved back into the city, we'd owned the condo, which we were just kind of tired of condo living, and we're living outside the city. So we decided to move into the city and try and figure out things out. And even in that time, the 4.5 years that we've been back in the city, the prices here have gone from, I think at then they were absurd. It was like $800,000 was basically the cheapest you could buy a house for. And I had been under the impression that that craziness would stop and prices would drop. But right now it seems that your entry point for a house is about $1.4 million. So that's why I was in PI looking at all those $10,000 houses going, man, life would be so much easier.
Every once in a while, my wife and I will talk about it. It always seems to be, you know, our let's simplify our life in 5 to 10 years plan. But we've been together for 11 years, and it never seems to be any closer than that.
No. I hear you.
I was visiting a friend of mine, a guy I went to high school with, had a house just outside of Charlottetown. And it's a little, you know, the prices are a bit more, a bit higher, like, you know, the closer to the city you get.
Absolutely, yeah.
But, you know, he was telling me how much his three-bedroom finished basement house was. And I said, yeah, in Calgary, that buys you a one-bedroom apartment if it's currently on fire.
Yeah, absolutely. My wife and I just went and looked at some condos just for the sake of, like, just seeing if, you know, maybe we'll move back into a condo in Vancouver. And the cheapest, like, two bedrooms are, like, $550,000. So it's just... it's ridiculous. I can go on forever about it.
Well, let's talk about off-the-grid living. Sheltered.
Yeah, sure. All right. Sheltered. Let's do it.
You just wrapped up the run. I know that when we saw you at Calgary, we went out and had a couple of beverages, and you leaned over and whispered, it's going to be 15 issues.
Right.
I wasn't allowed to tell anyone.
Right.
So... You always had the plan. How do you feel now that you're on the other side of it?
I feel good. Like, I feel like we did what we wanted. We told the story that we wanted to. The ending on that story is exactly the ending that we planned from the beginning. And I feel good about it. You know, like I can go back and quibble about little bits and pieces that, like, I'd wish maybe I'd done differently. But overall, you know, I'm really happy with how it all came together and how it wrapped, and just the whole thing as a whole. No regrets.
I just read it, when the third trade came out. I sat and read the entire thing, and I had that moment. You know, as I got about halfway through, like I kind of think that this is that I know what that last page is, but didn't know if you pulled the trigger on it.
Yeah, it's it was one of those things where, like, as we're getting close to doing that, I did get more anxious because I was worried that, like, some people were going to get really, really sort of pissed off about it. But it really was where the whole story was going. It was the ending that it needed. It was the ending it had to have. You know what? There is a part earlier on in the series. I'm trying to dance around without spoiling for anyone who might be listening who hasn't read it.
Chris hasn't read the ending. So.
All right.
Nope. Well,
there is a part early in the series, though, where one of the members at Safe Haven basically sits down and, like, basically describes the plot to the last issue. If you go back and read it. So it's not like it's that ending is an out of nowhere ending. It's something that that they knew was a possibility.
I started watching Kimmy Schmidt, and I'm like, this is just ripping off.
You know what? Somebody said that to me the other day. I asked if I was concerned about it. And I'm like, well, like, I thought it was pretty ridiculous. This guy, I think, was just off his meds. But yeah, I enjoy that show.
And they let him, and they gave him access to the internet.
Yes. Well, they gave him access to a comic book store where I was signing.
Oh, nice.
This is one of those face-to-face things.
Oh, even better. It's even more exciting when the crazy person's right in front of you. Uh-huh. The block button doesn't work in those cases.
No.
And both me and Keith have been that person, unfortunately.
Absolutely. I've totally been that person.
Comics is riddled with those people. You run into it quite often, which is fine. You know, it's safe crazy. It's not.
We're people that have chosen a pastime that is entirely about sitting quietly and staring at something.
For sure.
It's not like we're re-engaging our social skills a lot as we.
Next time you see Ed, you should show him your tattoo, Keith.
Absolutely. That's, we'll put in a notation for what episode that I explain my trying to show my G.I. Joe tattoo to Larry Hama and not making eye contact as I'm doing it.
is your tattoo on your ass or something like that? Is it a tramp stamp?
It's on my my calf.
Right.
But so he throws his leg right on the table.
I kept raising my leg trying to catch his eye, and he was just like head down sign and stuff until I ended up with my foot actually sitting on the table.
Nice.
And he still never acknowledged me. Nice. Found my book first, so that was nice.
Yes.
That was lovely. Ed, you mentioned Cluster.
Yeah.
You're three issues into that one?
I think the fourth issue just came out.
Okay.
Like literally just came out. Yeah. What day is it today? Thursday. So it came out yesterday.
Fantastic. I should mention, are all of these ongoings, any of the minis that you're working on?
Cluster for right now is ongoing. It's one of those things where we'll see, they evaluate sales as we go along. The Mantle is dependent on sales. Secret Wars Battle World, which I mentioned earlier, is just, I did just a story, and it's like two stories per issue, and I just did a story in that first issue. But Cluster for now is ongoing.
What's your Battle World story?
It's a MODOK story.
Well, that's awesome.
Do you know, are you guys caught up with Secret Wars? You know what's going on?
I read the free comic day. I haven't read number one.
Okay. But you know
I'm
that,
in the
like,
same situation.
Basically, all the worlds are basically kind of gone, and there's one world of all the like different like multiverses from like the different universes from Marvel. So you've got like, you know, one land that's like, you know, the 616 universe, and there's one land that's the Ultimates, and then you've got Old Man Logan land, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I'm reading Convergence, and Secret Wars is just ripping it off. So.
Right. Okay. Well, you figured out then. I wrote a story about MODOK, where MODOK basically plans to take over Battleworld, and his plan involves building a device that will teleport all of the other dimensional MODOKs to him, so that they can work together towards this plan. And it goes about as well as you think a room full of MODOKs will.
Room full of MODOKs was also the name of your band when you were in Sudbury, right?
Yes. But yeah, it was a lot of fun to write. It was Scott Hepburn drew it, who's an incredible artist, and it just came out. It was so much fun. It's a real fun story.
Let's go back to Cluster.
Sure.
So, outer space, prison planet. I've read to issue three. So
okay.
I'm not quite caught up. Give us a bit more. Give the listeners a bit more to go on.
Sure. Yeah. So it's set to a distant time in the future. It's an indeterminate point in the future. I'm always worried about like sending something in like 20, when you see something that's like set in 2010, something that came out in the 70s.
Yeah, like we're all watching, like 4 or 5 years away from catching up with Blade Runner, for God's sake.
Yeah, exactly. So I always like, I was just put my.
But is that really a problem? I mean, the Apple set in 2000. That's an awesome movie. When the screen comes up and it gives a date in the past,
yeah,
that just makes me feel good.
Does it? For me, it's always just a weird feeling. It gives me a weird feeling. I like to do something where you don't even have to think about it. So, like, it's set indeterminate time in the future. It's in the future. So even if you watch it 200 years from now, it's still in the future. Or read it 200 years in the future. Yeah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying?
What was Max Headroom's? It was, like a half an hour in the future or something like that?
I can't even remember.
30 minutes into the future. like 10 minutes into the feature, something like that. Yeah, it was like a crazy. Yeah. I mean, I've rewatched Strange Days recently, and it's a bit weird watching it now.
Right. Because that's all 2000, right?
Isn't it? It's New Year's Eve 1999.
Right.
So going into 2000 at the end of the film. And it's a bit weird watching it now. Because it was quite cyberpunky.
Yeah. See, there you go. But yeah, all that aside, so it's set at an indeterminate time in the future, as happens in a lot of sci-fi stuff. Earth has sort of exhausted its resources and is looking for another planet to inhabit. They find this planet called Midlothian, which is, close to, but not exactly the same as Earth's atmosphere. So they have to terraform the planet, to make it inhabitable. There is an alien race there called the Pagarani who are giving humans a hard time. And the backstory is essentially that Earth has basically burned through its military force. And as a result, they have to start conscripting prisoners. It just happens to be handy that both the prison system and the military system are privatized in the future. So it makes it much easier for them to feed into one another. And yeah, we follow, Samara Simmons, who is a senator's daughter who ends up on, Midlothian for a crime that we don't, does not initially sort of spell that for the reader, but, we know she did something bad. She's on this planet. She's sort of, thrown into, the prison life there. And it's, you know, through her eyes that we get to see what prison life there is like. And it's all about her going out on her first mission and everything goes shit sideways. And they have to try and break back into the prison or get back into the prison. And that's sort of the breakdown of what it is, where it's going, all that sort of stuff.
I was going to say earlier when you were talking about Mad Max that I now split films into I liked it, I didn't like it, explosions. Those are my categories, and this is a Cluster's a good explosions book.
Yeah,
you got a lot of shoot 'em up. Bit different than you know certainly some of the stuff I've read from you of late.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's been a lot of fun. I tried to like I'm trying to do something that feels like I'm a big sci-fi horror film guy. So, like during the 80s, that's all I did was watch First Choice Super Channel or would rent as many videos as I could get my hands on. And I wanted to try and do something that had that the sort of feel of like those 80s sci-fi films I used to watch, like usually the lower budget sort of schlockfests, like any. I'm blanking on this Rutger Hauer film I was thinking about the other day, Deadlock. You know, give it that sort of feel of Deadlock or like even Cyborg, you know, that right. Shitty Van Damme film. But, you know, try and give it that feel, but make it good. You know what I mean? Like,
there's actually a made-for-TV movie based off of Deadlock that remakes it almost exactly.
Really?
It's a good movie. I like it. Yeah.
Jeez, I had no idea.
What's it called?
Is it called Deadlock
as well?
It's
called Deadlock. It doesn't even match too.
What's that?
It's one of those Super Channel made for TV movies that they didn't even change the name. It's called Deadlock without two. Huh. Like they didn't even add a two. It's named the same as the original.
Huh.
But obviously ripping off the script almost exactly.
That has no tremendous amount of homework after this show.
No Rutger Hauer, though?
No Rutger Hauer. No name. I think, off the top of my head, Mina Peoples is the female protagonist in it, but I can't remember the male. But no Rutger Hauer, which is always a disappointment.
Absolutely.
You seen Hobo with a Shotgun, Ed?
Yeah, I have.
You seen Hobo with a Shotgun.
God, it's a classic. Canadian cinema at its finest right there. It's like right. That and Air Bud. That's our great contribution to film. All right. Well, you have one more project coming out just a few weeks away, this was just announced at Calgary Expo last year. Was being announced. You're doing some Captain Canuck.
That's right. Yeah, I'm doing New Adventures of Classic Canuck. So it's the book. I comes out the 20 something. I'm sorry for not knowing the exact date, but Kalman Andrzejewski. Is I hope that's right. I don't know how to pronounce his name.
I've been introduced to him, and that's as close as I was going to get.
All right. He's doing the main part of the book, which is like basically a new Captain Canuck, new stories, and it's a reimagining of the old Canuck. And the stuff I'm doing, which are like 6-page backup stories in each issue, will be featuring the classic Captain Canuck. Kind of picking up right after the last issue that came out in the 80s, and doing sort of mini adventures with him, with some pretty awesome artists. Marcus Toe is doing the first two short stories, which is, it's a two-parter. And I don't know if I can say the other ones because I don't know if it's been announced yet, so I won't say just to keep myself out of trouble.
Better not say. I don't think it's listed. It's not listed in the Free Comic Day.
All right.
Who the artists are, so probably it hasn't been announced. 27th of May.
There we go. Okay.
And there was a Free Comic Day issue of it. I know the Canuck feed said that they had at least 6 different countries that they said that people had tweeted photos from. The story you have in the Free Comic Day, is that, will that be the backup in number one, or is it a...
No, that's not even really a story. It's more of like an overview on who Captain Canuck is that I wrote for that. The stories I'm writing don't start until the first issue.
So that's the previously on. If you don't remember where the story was in 1983,
yeah,
then a little bit of a catch up.
That's right.
But you got to work on that with George Freeman.
Yes, that was really cool. For me, I'm a huge Canuck fan, so like, yeah, that was really cool to be able to work with him. I didn't have any interaction with him, and like, I went through editors and stuff, but just to work on a script, send it, and have him, you know, turn over those, like, just still like that, you know, he hasn't really been in comics for a while, or not drawing anyway.
Just the odd inking job every once in a while, but you don't see the name very often.
That's right. And, but yeah, he's really good. He's just really good.
He's, I mean, looking at these pages, like he's as good or better as he was, you know, 35 years ago when he did this
book. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I mean, really, he's stepped back, but I mean, it is as good or better than, the early 80s when he was doing it.
For sure.
Tying the many threads together we've been chatting about, Claude St. Alban is doing, one of the Convergence books, actually.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think it's the Green Lantern, but yeah, he's doing one of the minis from.
I didn't know that. I'll have to check that out then.
He was anchor for the listeners who don't know Captain Canuck. He was anchor on Captain Canuck, and wrote and drew the backup story Beyond. And Beyond is it's announced in the Free Comic Day that they are doing a remaster, including 2 new chapters by Claude, George Freeman, and Richard Cumley. Beyond ran was a sword and sorcery that ran as a backup in Captain Canuck. Claude knew where the story would go. I've never posted it, so now that the story's going to come out, I won't. He did tell me at a comic show a few years ago what the big twists were going to be, so we'll find out if he sticks to that or tells a new story to wrap it up. One of those things that I never got around to writing as a blog, and now I'm glad I didn't. Is that monthly, bi-monthly? What do you have a schedule yet for?
I believe it's monthly. Yeah, it's monthly.
And you're 6 or 8 pages?
I'm doing 6 pages for at least 6 issues, and then hopefully it'll continue beyond that, but we will see.
Fantastic. Well, I mean, it's really cool that, it's always cool to have like the dream project that someone actually gets to work on.
Yeah, it's an odd one for sure, because like it's one of those things where I've been running around telling people like one day I'm gonna write Captain Connect, I'm gonna make him cool, and to actually be doing it is a whole other thing. It's a really bizarre feeling.
We're almost to the end of our time. Chris, do you want to jump in with anything before we?
Yeah, actually, I had one question for Ed, and I just have a feeling there's a story here because, well, he did an issue a couple of years ago of a book that it's a one shot. The story's pretty wacky, and I just think there might be a story here. Black River, what happened?
Black River was a book that it's kind of a long story. There is a story behind it, and. It was a pitch that I'd done with Jomar, the artist on there, and we had pitched it to to Image, and it was kind of a weird thing where it almost got picked up, but I pitched it during a transitionary period for Image when they were switching kind of who was in command, and it got lost in the shuffle, and ended up not landing there, which at the time was pretty devastating to me, but it sat on my hard drive for a while, just collecting digital dust, I guess. And there was a publisher, 215 Inc., that they were looking for projects, and I sort of went in and kind of rejigged it a little bit with the lettering to try and put it off as like a one-shot and sent it to them so that basically just so I could finally get something out. And so I, they printed it, they published it, sorry, and so it's out there now. It's one that I always wanted to go back and do more with. There was a longer story that was going to go on that, funnily enough, like the Mantle, also sort of deals with legacy, and it would have actually dealt a lot with that dude's successor. And it was a pretty interesting story, but it's not. I don't think it's anything.
See,
that I
actually, now that I know there was going to be a successor, the story sort of makes sense.
It
switches genres there. It's crime fiction, then all of a sudden we got a vigilante in one shot.
Yeah, it was just
something went wrong. To ask Ed about this.
Yeah, it was like I said. It was meant to be more than it ended up being, and. Unfortunately that, there was no way for me to finish it. Cause I would have had to do it out of pocket, and there's no way I could have afforded, to do that, without having a publisher in place. It is one of those books that I keep kind of looking back at and thinking about going and doing some more with, but, I am touching on a lot of similar themes, the Mantle, so I'm not sure. We'll see. Maybe one day. I actually was even considering putting Black River in an issue of the Mantle. Probably not. That probably will not happen.
All right, Ed, we're going to wrap it up.
All right.
Thanks so much for coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And so Cluster, Captain Canuck, Mantle, Volume 3 of Sheltered is just out in trade.
That's right. Murder Book just came out. Yeah, Secret Wars, Battle World, and Murder Book just came out fairly recently, right around the same time as that Sheltered 3 as well.
I bought it on Free Comic Day.
Excellent.
So there was a lot of Britain on Free Comic Day for me.
That's the way you want it to be. That's the way I want it to be, at least.
Anything I missed that you want to plug?
No, I think we got it all covered, man.
All right, well, we will have you on again. It's always great talking to you, Ed.
All right, you too.
All right.
I'll talk to you guys later on.
Say goodnight, Chris.
Good night, Chris.
that's
cool. Sorry, old joke. Chris _ We Talk on Twitter.
All right, follow us on Twitter at We Talk Podcast. Our website is wetalkpodcast.com. Email is comics@wetalkpodcast.com. And we are also, you can subscribe on iTunes. Please rate us on iTunes. I don't know if we, I think we have one review. So, you know, two wouldn't hurt. And, also we're on Stitcher and we are on, comicosity.com. So there's no excuse to not, listen to our show. And with that, we are OUT.